Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to LNB, Passage to Empowerment. I am the N of LNB, and we have Lydia.
Hello.
And Brenda.
Hello.
And tonight's topic is mental health, bringing it into the light. It's going to be kind of a heavy topic tonight. So hang on. Here we go. Brenda, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Well, I will say this. Even though I am studying for my psychology degree, and not too long from now we'll get that doctorship, Nina is the one who actually spearheaded this, and I was explaining to her it was probably wiser to go that way. Otherwise, the rest of you are like, she's always talking about psychology, which... It's probably a real part of my conversations, but the point is this, folks. You don't have to be a mental health professional to understand how severely mental health disorders and issues can affect your life, and it can even be fatal. So with that, I just want to applaud Nina for getting her dander up and bringing this to the entire network for the week.
And the reason I did that was because of the shootings of the three police officers in Newfoundland and the two in Las Vegas about a month ago. All three shooters that ended up killing these people had mental health issues, and nobody did anything about it. The one person I know, the one from Canada, the one that killed the three officers from Canada, said he was going to go out with a bang, and everybody knew he was a gun fanatic, and everybody sat back and just let it happen. The same, there was a husband and wife shooter in Las Vegas. They had a website dedicated to killing and killing of police officers. People went to their website. They had lots of hits on that, and again, nobody did anything. I think it's about time we all started looking out for each other and do something about this, because this can't go on. One of these days it's going to be your family that's affected.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, and this is an underlying thing that for us all to remember, is that even if a parent is the one who is experiencing mental health disturbances in their regime or their life or themselves, it will actually further impact the family if people aren't dealing with it, because then the children are more susceptible to depression and anxiety issues. So it's, and quite honestly, most of the time, that's when everything starts. Obviously, because childhood can be a traumatic experience, even for the best childhoods. It's not so much that I'm saying all childhoods are horrific. It's just children are going through major development, and that also includes a lot of cognitive understanding, trying to figure out what's going on around their world. So you're already uncertain and confused about what's going on or what you're seeing. And then for you to be impacted with emotional fears and in excessive sadness, or to be around somebody who's doing that and you don't know what your role is, it starts to instill depressive and anxiety-ridden issues. So don't make the mistake of thinking that it's your problem and not your children's or your nieces and nephews or any young person that is in your life on a regular basis.
And, you know, I did pick up a few facts along the way of setting this show up. I talked to somebody from the Commission of Mental Health today, and here in Canada, every hospital has a mental health ward. If you go in to the hospital and you need help, there'll be somebody there for you 24 hours a day. There is a crisis line, and that is open 24 hours a day, and I believe it's down in the U.S. as well. We have free services for every mental health issue there is. So if you need the help, please get it. If you require therapy and you do not, some therapy is you will have to pay for. Some is covered by Alberta Health or the health care in the province you live in. And others is not. So if you do not have insurance through the company you're working for or you're not working, then Family Services will cover it. So if you need help, the help is available for you. Please go and get it. If somebody you know needs help, please try and talk them into getting the help they need. As adults, we can't force them to get help, but hopefully we can talk them into it. A few facts. Suicide accounts for 24% of all deaths among 15 to 24-year-olds. Now, that's pretty darn high. We really need to do something. We need to make everyone aware. And also, there should be no stigma attached to having a mental health issue. We all go through depression, feeling low, whatever, at some time in our lives. There's no shame in saying, I need some help to get out of this. I've done it. Brenda and Lydia know that. I've been down. Mm-hmm. I call them. They help me. So, we all need to be aware of what's going on with our family and friends, and if they need the help, be there to help them and point them in the direction they should be going.
There is quite a bit of a stigma still attached to it, even if we say these things that, we may know people that have a mental illness. And sometimes it's just really big. In fact, I read of a case who a woman had a son who got top grades, all the stuff. He was a debater, or he was, in the school orchestra. And then all of a sudden, overnight, his brain turned on him, and he became obsessive, and then he started hallucinating. And the doctor told him that he had schizophrenia, and he said to the parents, you'll be walking on eggshells for the rest of your lives. And he said, I'm going to give you a good piece of advice. Don't tell anyone.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said that they didn't for 10 years. And she said most of that was because the stigma seemed too much to handle. And then she realized that they were contributing to the silence and that mm-hmm. was wrong. And so she became a very vocal advocate and co-created a program called Breaking the Silence, Teaching the Next Generation About Mental Illness. That's being used in schools in every state and 7 countries.
Yeah, okay, that's disgusting.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the World Health Organization puts it this way, which I think is extremely apropos. Talking about mental health, talking about mental disorders means talking about stigma and human rights. Persons with mental disorders often suffer a wide range of human rights violations and social stigmas. Mm-hmm. And in many countries, people with mental disorders have limited access, as Nina was pointing out earlier, and we were pointing out earlier. So that it's where, you know, World Health Organization comes in, because these psychiatric institutions that do still exist in a lot of countries that have economic issues, they're just inadequate and degrading. And many of them are harmful. The treatment and the practices are unhygienic. Inhuman living conditions often occur. In America, instead of even going for, they just wipe them out. There's usually like one main regional institution. And that could be for almost a whole state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody hears about Bellevue in New York and in the New York area. And then here we have Western State. They call it Western State. And its capacity is a lot less because of what the monies that are attributed to mental health. And here's the thing that still amazes me. It's almost like people telling themselves that, you know, cockroaches are somebody else's problem, and yet cockroaches are spilling out of their refrigerators, crawling out of their ears, whatever. It's basically saying that it's not your problem because maybe the cockroaches are coming from someone else's house. It's still your problem. It's still affecting your life, and it's still just as disgusting.
It's definitely, hello?
Yeah.
Okay. It's definitely affecting people's lives in ways that, you know, they possibly don't know or care about until it, you know, it's somebody in their family. They, you know, they, people will, you know, ignore people on the streets, the homeless, and many of them, I don't know what the statistics are. I'm sure one of us can find it, but many of them have mental illness. And some people think, well, they drink all the time. Well, most people, not most people, people who experience a mental illness often turn to drugs and alcohol to self-medicate, finding it more socially acceptable than going for treatment and less expensive than going for treatment.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is true. Stats here. Stats in Edmonton, in Canada, say 20% of Canadians will personally experience a mental illness in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
About one half, 49% of those who feel they have suffered from depression or anxiety have never gone to see a doctor about this problem. That's kind of scary.
Yeah.
It actually, in the United States, it says 1 in 5 people will suffer a severe mental illness at some point in his or her life. That's according to federal statistics. On average, 1 in 5 children in classrooms nationwide are likely living with someone who has a mental illness.
Yeah, and the stats are pretty high for the younger generation as well. And, you know, they're that high. This Earth now is a very complex place to live in, and the kids are pulled here, there, and everywhere, they really need somebody to talk to, you know, and if it can't be the parents, it's got to be somebody else. We really need to take a look at what is going on around us, be in tune with the people around us, and recognize that maybe they are in trouble. It is a very serious, serious situation, and I'm going to give the number out right now, and we do have somebody on hold. The number is 646-727-2914. If you would like to call in and tune in and let us know what your experience is with mental illness, what your thoughts are on it, you're more than welcome to share those with us.
Were you going to bring the call up?
Excuse me?
I was just wondering if you were going to bring the caller up or were you going to wait for a second?
I'm going to wait for a second. Brenda, what did you have to say?
Good. And I have
I was just going to... Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say that there's a big difference between just like a mental illness and a mental disorder, the way that it's broken down from the professional side of things. So it's not a real... I mean, we tend to just talk about it from one big giant catch-all, but the degrees are extremely wide, and how you deal with people based on what kind of, well, the way that they basically are describing it is like what type of mental, emotional, or behavioral issues, because some things are emotional, some things are behavioral. And it makes a difference on how you approach what's going on in someone's life. And that's why what Nina suggested by this whole thing of just find out and get involved to the point of helping somebody seek assistance, that's probably more important than your deciding to diagnose someone, which we've all experienced that. Oh, she's bipolar. Well, he's just a depressive person, or he's always depressed. There's all kinds of things that people throw out there in a sort of flippant manner, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's so. I have a friend who has a child who's autism spectrum, and we've known her for years, and there's been so many stages on medication, on ways to deal with the behaviors, the things that are in his environment, his diet. If it were less complex, then people like me wouldn't have to go to school for 8 years or whatever to make sure that we're trained in diagnosing and treating these disorders, or to help people live better lives. So
exactly.
What's the best way that you can help someone is point them in a good direction and support them by
not getting
into the stigma. Yeah.
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 Well, I know the gentleman I was talking to today from the Mental Health Commission said that they have an anti-stigma program here, and I have seen their commercials on TV. So I know they are trying to, you know, take the stigma off of mental issues, and that's a step forward as far as I'm concerned. If we can take the stigma off, then people won't be so afraid to get the help they need, because I think the majority of them know they need help. Well, I'm not going to say majority. Some of them know they need help and are just afraid to say anything about it because of the stigma attached to it. So...
Yeah.
There shouldn't be. Like, if we break our arm, we're going to go to the doctor. Well, if something isn't right in our minds, why shouldn't we be able to be open about it and go see a doctor, too? Why do we have to worry what people will think about us? That shouldn't even come into play as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Well, in the United States, there's, our health care is not where it should be, even with Obamacare. I believe it's a step in the right direction, but there are many people that cannot afford health care in our country, and I think that's a shame. I had a brother who he was 18 years older than me, and he had a mental illness and went to in the Army, and I don't think that helped at all. And he had problems all of his life. I don't know if he ever got a diagnosis. I was never told the diagnosis. But he ended up, and at that point, he got help. He would go to a facility in Chicago that helped the VA, but he hated it so much that he had to get out. This was in the early 70s, and, you know, they just didn't have the medications, or he didn't like the medications, I'm not really sure. And he ended up dying on the streets. Well, he didn't die on the street, but he hung out on the streets. He wandered the streets of Chicago for many years, and he just stopped eating, and he ended up dying of pneumonia because he weighed less than 100 pounds when he died.
Oh, well.
And at the time, my mother couldn't help him. She didn't have the money, and my sister was a single mom, and she didn't have the money. And, you know, they tried to take care of him. They tried to make sure he was okay. But it just, you know, yeah. So mental illness is a big thing. And if it had been later on, like in the 90s and, you know, and above, he would have been homeless. He would have been, you know, homelessness to me is people don't understand the layers of it. You know, they will judge people thinking that they're too lazy to work, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I believe that a lot of it is mental illness. Or vets that have come back with such traumatic brain, post-traumatic stress disorder, and there's a stigma and or a waiting list to get treated, that they just live on the streets. They can't hack it. They can't hack life.
Yeah.
And take our caller, Nina.
They didn't press 1, so I don't know whether I should take the caller or not.
Oh, okay.
Caller, if you want to come on and talk to us, if you want to press 1, then we'll know for sure that you do want to come on live. If not, I will just leave you on mute, and you can just listen to the show.
Can't you check with your magic button, Nina?
I can, but I'm on as host, so everything might go silent if I do that. So one of you could.
Well, let's try it. Let's find out.
Huh?
Let's find out.
No, let's not.
Well,
no, let's not.
Yeah.
In case I disconnect everybody.
I don't think
one of you can do that.
I think it's better if they want to press 1, they can do that. So, you know,
okay,
press 1,
okay.
Caller, if you want to talk. And
I'll just
then
go
we'll
ahead
talk.
And check. You guys go ahead.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, I do believe that this should be taught in the schools. And I think that, as you said, Nina, that, you know, more and more this, you know, our children are growing up and, you know, autism is on the rise, and bipolar is on the rise, and ADHD is on the rise, and you know these are biologically based brain disorders. They can't be overcome by willpower, and they're not related to a person's character or intelligence. You know they are. You know they're just not going to go away. These are things that people are going to struggle with all their lives. And I know I have friends who have children that are bipolar, and they're great when they take their meds, but some of them don't like to take their meds or start feeling, as they say, flat. And, you know, just they don't like it. And so they stop taking it, and then things go south right away.
Well, I know that from personal experience because my own daughter is bipolar. And I know when she was in our lives, I'd know the minute that she wasn't taking her meds because she was just not. She was so out of it and flighty and bouncy and everything else. You knew she wasn't taking her meds. So I'd just say to her, Tam, have you taken your meds today? And she would say, what the, you know, Mom. And I said, well, have you? And then she would say, well, no, I haven't. How do you know? I said, by your actions, by your words. I just know you haven't taken your meds. Go and take your meds. So then she'd take her meds, and in a little while she would be back down to earth again. But, yeah, it was pretty hard to deal with, especially because she didn't want to take her meds, and she was doing a bunch of other stuff besides the medical medication.
She was
self-medicating with alcohol and other drugs. So it wasn't a good time, so that is basically why we have taken the tough love route with her, both Jim and I, and her three kids. And we have nothing more to do with her until she can get the help that she needs. And she really does need help, but doesn't see it herself, and there's nothing we can do for her anymore. So now it's up to her, and hopefully she will get the help she needs.
Yeah, hopefully she will. I really pray that she will. I know it's a heartbreak, and, you know, it is a heartbreak for people. It's, you know, you don't even know. People may be smiling and be okay, but, you know, they have a child that is in deep trouble, and, you know, they may have to cut ties with them. I have a friend who has a stepson who is bipolar, and he was living with them for a while, but then he had a job, and then all of a sudden, like I said, he stopped taking his meds and things went south, and he was dangerous. He would leave stuff on the stove. He had a towel on the stove that caught fire. It was very dangerous, and they took the tough love too. They said, until you're ready to get help and stay on your medication, we have to ask you to leave now. And for a while he lived on the streets, but that was distasteful to him, you know, thank God. And he ended up in Boulder. We have quite a bit of mental health facilities that will help, sliding scale or, you know, and if you don't have a job, they help. And they helped him, and last I heard, he was doing well. He was staying on his medication and everything and kept a job, so... You know, and that's another whole stigma, you know. I mean, if you have these mental disorders and you're out of work for any time and then you go to look for a job, they might ask you, why did you not work for a year or 2 years or whatever? And, you know, are you honest with them? Do you tell them you have schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or whatever you have? I think you're judged pretty harshly, and unless the employer understands, you know, I just think it boils down to education. I think we need to be more educated as a society.
I agree.
Well, yes, and this is why it's so difficult, especially with PTSD and type issues. People can't see it. I mean, they might see you doing something that they think is suspicious behavior to them, but they can't see a broken arm. They can't see that your eyes are missing, or they can't see a missing leg. So they don't, I mean, even somebody who might have like a big rash or a wound, people are going to respond more sympathetically to them than they would to somebody who has a fancy name disorder that people don't really understand. And it's all about education. I remember when I started training to be a psychologist, I thought, hey, I've been doing this kind of thing all my life. I've been helping people with their relationships and helping them with this kind of da-da-da, which in the mental health field, they call it the helpers. Everybody's got helpers in their life, usually, whether you want them or not. But that's not the same thing as when you're trained to recognize certain disorders. And let's face it, I know that there are people who have been diagnosed with one disorder, and then maybe a year later they decide it's a different disorder. It's not that it's so complicated. So it is not that the people are just bad in in their field as in the changes that come from research. Psychologists, psychiatrists, this whole field is constant research. And it's not to frustrate anybody or to come up with a new way of giving a name to something. It's because it's about prevention. That's the big key for mental health, is to help prevent people being so skewed to where it's harder to bring them back. Yeah. So just remember that when we're meeting someone, the likelihood is they've been touched by some kind of mental health disorder, whether it's a person in their family, whether it's something that they experienced because they went through some amazing trauma, or whether it was something they experienced in childhood, but they grew out of it. You know, maybe they experienced a lot of bullying. Maybe they had a parent that was an alcoholic or had some other issue going on in their life and it was too overwhelming. I think we should all make a pledge to just be open to being supportive. And maybe that's something we should talk about. What does supportive mean for the mental health, for mental health issues?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that, you know, recognizing there are groups that are trained to help people. You know, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, they offer local programs and internet resources. That, you know, I think joining a support group or, you know, asking people to join a support group or, you know, maybe trying to find one and tell them the times, that can definitely be a support. You know, I think that
being unafraid of talking about it with them, too, is also support. And they don't get that very often. You don't find that there's still, the numbers are so high for people that are still afraid of people with mental health issues. Why? Why are they afraid? These people are just like us. They just need a little bit of extra help. Just being there, letting them know that we are there and we are more than willing to talk to them. That in itself is a big step, a really big step. And then once they've taken that step, then we can point them towards where they need to be as far as a support group, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, medication, all of that other stuff then falls in line. I have a cousin and a friend who are both bipolar, but both of them recognize when the meds aren't working for them. Both of them are going to psychologists all the time. The one is just going back now, but they go all the time, but they also are aware enough of their own bodies and their own minds to know when their medications have stopped working and to seek the help that they need. But not everyone is. Sometimes those of us that are around our family and friends need to maybe point out to them that, you know, I think your meds may not be working anymore. Maybe it's time for a change. Maybe you should talk to your doctor because I've noticed this, this, and this. And then that is helping and being very supportive too. You know, just being able to talk to them about it and letting them know that we care enough to talk to them about it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, because a lot of times people with mental illness isolate themselves. You know, and they might not.
Yes, they do.
They might not reach out to people. You know, so you know if you notice these things, like Nina said, to reach out to them. You know, they might not be capable of reaching out to you. So you definitely don't want them isolated, because that's, you know, it's not good for anyone to be isolated. We live with lots of people usually. You're not usually way out in the country. You know, don't isolate yourself. Also, don't equate yourself with your illness. You know, if someone says to me, I'm bipolar, I might say to them, well, you are not, that's not you, that is your disorder. You have a bipolar disorder. You're not, that's not yourself. you know. Instead of saying you're schizophrenic, you might say, I have schizophrenia. You know,
exactly.
I think that's part of the stigma. Don't equate yourself with your illness.
Yeah, I'm a worthy person. I'm a nice person. And I happen to have a mental health disorder. Just
yeah.
like, you know, you're a nice person and you're a worthy person and you're maybe missing some toes because of dialysis issues or diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the reality is I think there's stigma against that, too. I mean, there is a basic stigma against anything that seems different from us. But there's one thing that I will just say this. It's just to try to, you know, pop a little bit on the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about this. At the beginning of my career, what kind of things make us think that we're, you know, other people are different? Because normally we don't come from the thought process of, you know, I'm different from everyone else. I personally do that. But most people come from the thought process of they're really different from me. You know, what's wrong with them? It's
mm-hmm.
a really strange shift in our heads because it's sort of a survival tactic in our cognitive thought process, there's something weird with them. So then I thought about human beings. And if you just stop and take a good look at yourself, you got these long appendages that are hanging off of your body at the top, not at the middle, not down with the other two appendages, but they're hanging off the top where your shoulders are. And there's like these five little weird tendrils that are hanging off of your two little big, you know, weird appendages. You got some other junk on top of your head that's a lot like stuff that's somewhere else on your body, the unmentionable part. And yet, the rest of it tends to be smoother unless you're like one of those weirdos and you have a whole lot of hair on your body. Or you're one of those weirdos that has no hair on your body. I mean, if you just were to think about somebody coming to this world and looking at a human being, they're pretty strange looking. I mean, if you could just shift your brain. And so it's conceivable that somebody who doesn't seem to act exactly the way we do, they seem to not really think the way we do, would appear really disturbing. It's one of those things like when little girls encounter a boy's body for the first time and they've never seen that, and vice versa. So this isn't something that we're incapable of dealing with. And this is the whole point of bringing it to light. You know, it's just happens to be a difference, and it's a difference that can be managed so that we all can be happier and safer. A good organization for everyone to check out. Now, we were talking about support and what does that mean. Holly and AJ brought up some really good information in the chat room. Support is making sure or actually checking with somebody to take your medication. You know, did you get your pills in tonight? I've done that to people throughout the years. And I'll give you a quick little story, real quick. My uncle, he had a mental health issue. And it was managed well with medication. One of the things my brother said that, you know, happened with my uncle, who ended up dead. He ended up shot and killed because he flew into town. He was supposed to stay away. He was supposed to honor one of those, whatever it is, that one of those orders, protection orders for his family, because he had been in a mental health institution and he would have trouble when he wasn't managing his medications. But instead of supporting him and taking his medications, my grandmother, she just wanted him to come home to the state, because that's her boy. And then my dad and his sister, I think they tried to sort of say take your medication, but there's still this thing with families who don't want to admit the denial that their loved one could possibly have some issues. So they didn't really strongly support taking the medication. And he came to town, and he was out off his meds, and he went, and he was banging on the door of his wife. You know, they were separated. The children were there. They were all terrified. Someone called the police. She shot a gun through the door, but it didn't hit him. But it scared him, and he ran down the street. Well, this is back in the civil rights, in the inequality kind of issues of America. And the policeman who was on the scene at the hospital even said to my other uncle, he said, hey, he said, it's not right, but it was a black man running. We had a call about a gun, and we just shot first, and we asked questions later. And
wow.
I remember hearing how my uncle was told that, and it's just about his brother. And it was so accepted that nobody even went, like, that's just outrageous. But if everything had been changed, like if my uncle had stayed out of town, taken his medications because he had just gotten out of the hospital a couple weeks before that, he could have gotten a little bit back to base. And then he would have been able to deal with seeing his children and his wife when things were calmer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big support. You know what your friends use and need. If you don't know, there's a reason you feel guilty. And it's not, I don't think you should take on whether somebody committed suicide, but it is a warning that maybe you might want to be more inquisitive about your friends. AJ talked about not wanting to push too hard. You know, to me, the tough love comes out when you say things that it's not easy to say. And you're risking your relationship, but if you love them, it's more important for them to be healthy than for them to be your best pal. That's my personal opinion.
No, you're right, and I know from experience how tough it was having to deal with that every day, and I was told off I don't know how many times. But it comes a point in time where it's just you need the help, you need to be taking your meds, so I will put up with you yelling and calling me every nasty name you can think of. And it just got to a point where I would just kind of block her words out and look at her and say, go take your meds. That's all I would say. Go take your meds. If you're staying in this house, you are going to take your meds. If you don't want to take your meds, then you need to move. Because nobody wants to be around you if you're not taking your meds. She was really nasty.
Yeah.
If she wasn't on her meds. And I mean really nasty.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the tough love is, it's tough. There's nothing easy about it. You have to almost take on a thick skin just to be able to deal. And there was plenty of nights I went to bed crying because I couldn't do it in front of her because she would just take advantage of that too. But there was plenty of nights I would do that. And there was plenty of nights that I'd have all three of her kids in my room, in my bed with me because they were petrified of her or they were crying because of her. And it's not easy, folks. It is not easy. But if you love that person, you will do whatever it takes to help them. And if that means not seeing them for years or months, whatever it takes, that's okay too, because we can't back down now. If we back down now, we're just setting her up again for failure. She needs to now step up her program and realize that she needs to do what she needs to do to help herself.
Yeah, you can't do anything for somebody else. You can only, you can support the things by saying, that would be, hey, it would be a good thing for you to get involved with a support group or whatever. Again, let me point out this website. It's called NAMI. It's a really big National Alliance on Mental Illness. If any of you know who Glenn Close is, she's a very famous actress or actor, excuse me, and it's really a great organization for supporting people with mental health issues. And they have three main things that they say right when you go to their website. You know, hear Advocates for Change, from dialogue to action. But they say donate, speak out, and get involved. And we're doing that. I mean, well, as far as donating, I mean, you're donating your time and your energy. You're being involved. It's for speak out, inspire others with your message of hope. Show others they are not alone. Get involved. Become an advocate. Register on NAMI.org to keep up with NAMI news and events. You can go to conferences, folks. You don't have to be a mental health professional to attend them. You can be as little involved or as lot involved as you'd like to be. I worked crisis clinic many, many years ago. I wasn't in training at the time. I was actually in school for engineering. But there's so many places that you can give support, just like in your family and your friend, with your family and your friends. And there are times that I used to tell Mel, but she's really good about it. But Mel had some patches where she didn't remember to take her, I think, diabetes medicine or something. I'm like, she take your medicine, because her blood sugar got weird one time and it scared the bejeebies out of me. So for a while I started kicking her around, and teasing her or whatever. That's the way I support people with brutality. And she doesn't need it anymore, but she's real cognizant of it. And she looks at the examples, good and bad, that she's had in her life, which I really applaud. I find inspirational about. I find Mel always to be inspirational.
That's right.
She took a double dose. I love my friends. That's why I want to choke them all the time.
I'm so glad you want to choke us all the time.
Pardon?
I said, I'm so glad you want to choke us all the time. That just makes us appreciate the breath that we do take when we're not being choked.
Right.
I'm not part of the mental health problem. I'm part of the solution. And I do believe that mental health should involve laughter. Lots of it.
Yep, definitely.
Yes.
That helps in recovery. You know, I think that... NAMI also, they promote a lot of people's artwork. I think that a lot of people with mental illness are very creative types of people, and they promote people that belong to NAMI to do artwork, and I have bought different artwork by people from NAMI, and also cards. They usually make cards. I have sent in the past Christmas cards that were designed by people in NAMI. So that is another way you can support that organization and people with mental health problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at that. I mean, you get something by supporting. What an excellent way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, every little bit helps.
It's a win-win. And then also, they actually, in the back of the card, they talk about their organization. And I think that's a way to destigmatize people with mental health problems. They can be contributing members of society. They can contribute. you know, everyone can contribute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
well,
sure.
Theoretically, we are all contributing. The results may not always be what we would like, but theoretically, we are all contributing to the
right.
current state of affairs. So you want to change the outcome? Change your thoughts and your behaviors, folks. If you want to live in a safer society, then you have to invest in mental health care. So that you're not going to be blindsided by some angry young man who didn't get the right kind of attention, or his mom, you know, allowed him to play with her gun collection, even though he was constantly idealizing violence. Come on, folks. These big bongs, warning signals, that's probably the part that makes me angriest.
Yeah.
Like Mina said, somebody says, I want to go out with a bang. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And everybody isn't as obvious. There's a play called Night Mother. They called it a dark comedy, and there was a woman who was a caretaker for her mother who was in a wheelchair bound, and it was just the two of them. And they, as what tends to happen when there's just sort of two people, and one of them sort of depends on the other a little too much, the resentment takes place. Well, this whole play was about this one night where she was getting all these things in order for her mom and telling her where all the books were, the account information, all these things, which, take note, folks, all these things where the mom's sort of like, why are you telling me all that? I don't have to deal with that. You keep all the stuff for the accounts, and I don't need Miss Such and Such to come in here and check on my food. Why would she need to do that? You prepare my food. See, here's another thing. The caretakers, when they're constantly dependent upon, can become a mental health issue because it can lead to resentment and depression. And this woman, she finally said to her mom, I'm just ready to get off the roller coaster. And that mom spent the rest of the night trying to convince her daughter, she realized, from killing herself. You know, which unfortunately, because she was so dependent on her daughter just saw that as, you just want me around to take care of you. We all need help, and we all need support. If there's somebody that's constantly doing caretaking for another person, take a moment and go give them relief. Say, hey, I could probably come by and, you know, hang for a while if you need to go do some shopping. I mean, I know a lot of caretakers who don't get that. It's the simplest thing to say, why don't you just go out for an hour and get a shake or something? Folks, do what you can do. You know, maybe the only thing you can do is pick some flowers in your garden and bring them to somebody who's been having a rough patch and just say, I'm thinking of you. You have no idea what it'll do for their lives. It doesn't have to be a big, giant production.
It's true. And also, you know, if you notice that a friend is having problems, you know, like, you know, and you know they're not having, you know, their own mental illness, but a loved one might be having it. And to let them know that they can talk about it. You know, when I worked at Curbs for many years, it was a workout place for women, and we would all get to talking about our loved ones, mostly our kids, and I would talk about my son, and my son has ADHD, and it is considered a mental illness, and there's a lot of stigma involved, but the women would talk to me about it, and they knew, you know, they would always ask how my son was doing, and that, just those kind words and interest were amazing. Plus, they also had advice. They had doctors. They had different things that worked for them and their children. It was amazing. So not only, you know, maybe you don't know a child with a mental illness, but you might know the mom or the dad or the sister or the brother, you know, and to reach out to them is very, very important.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
so touched that you guys are all doing this, and everyone in the chat room and anyone who's come on to listen, because my platform, as best as I can try to push it, as when I complete my degree, is that everyone should have access to at least 6 to 8 sessions a year to a therapist, whether it's a psychiatrist or a psychologist, someone in the mental health field, a counselor, somebody that you could just go to talk to independent of anyone else you know, and just, if nothing else, to vent. You know, maybe you're pissed off because they took MASH off the air, just thinking about a Facebook thing that was on earlier. That MASH, you know, it touched a lot of people's lives, and it was so much a part of their lives that it was like a real person going away. So it may seem silly or weird or ridiculous to somebody else, but if you're feeling an emotional response, it's affecting you. And
yeah.
And even therapists need to see somebody. The crazy
yeah.
therapists are the ones who don't believe that.
Mm.
And so I believe this could happen nationwide if we donate at least 6 sessions a year, maybe 12, and the government can help compensate with maybe a tax break or something. Just, it doesn't have to be any gigantic thing. It could be just something to offset it, and then that way it doesn't have to be a big, giant health care cost. It shouldn't take money for everything. I mean, we used to barter other stuff. Maybe they could provide something else for therapists that doesn't cost, quote-unquote, money. But
mm-hmm.
I think all therapists should stand up and join me in that thought process. And I think shifting it. Yeah, shifting it so we all believe that we need it.
I think that's
yeah.
a good idea, but I think, mostly because of costs, and you know, you said something about the government, and we know how they are, whether it be Canadian or U.S. government. I think maybe in a group setting that would probably work for those 6 sessions, and then we are, quote-unquote, not bringing the costs up so high, because you know what the governments are like, Brenda. It's
yeah,
like pulling teeth,
no.
trying to get anything out of them, you know?
You know, I just found something out. I just learned something. I've learned a few things tonight, and so I'm really grateful. But one thing that I just learned is that there's 3 ways that the Affordable Care Act is increasing access to mental health and substance use disorder services. So the first thing is that they are expanding mental health and substance use disorder benefits, protection for 62 million Americans. That's one of the largest expansions in behavioral health coverage in a generation. I think it's more than a generation. Yeah. Yes, they, you know, it is definitely this Affordable Care Act has been very good. It said most health plans must now cover preventative services like depression screening for adults and behavioral assessments for children at no cost. And then starting in 2014, plans won't be able to deny you coverage or charge you more due to pre-existing health conditions, including mental illnesses. And I ran into this, we ran into this with my son. My husband started his own business, and we had to shop for health care. We had been with Kaiser Permanente since we got our son, And I wanted to stay there because he wasn't quite an adult, and he had an amazing pediatrician that was just, he was wonderful. I just loved him. I loved the way his mind worked, and he seemed a little ADHD to me personally, but he got my son, and that was worth so much to me. So I wanted to continue with that, and they refused us, saying that Pat had a pre-existing condition. So now we could go back, but now he's no longer able to go to a pediatrician. But, now they can't discriminate against that. So whatever you think about, you know, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, for mental health, it is a big step.
Yeah, for sure.
And see, that's why I was trying to address it from, well, what I was suggesting has twofold benefits. It's likely to reduce stigmatism or eliminate it, because mm-hmm. everybody is accessing, you know, mental health. It's mental health balance. That's the way I like to think of what I do, is helping people balance what's going on emotionally and behaviorally in their lives. And so if everybody's involved in it, it can't certainly be a problem, because then what would it say about yourself? The other thing is, everyone who always brings up the money, I'm not going to get into a political party thing about it, but the money always, you know, is more important than the issue. And so that alleviates both of those big issues. And then I would just like to see what would happen. I mean, it would be nice to try it for just even 1 year and see how it affects the community, right?
Well, it would be amazing if that would go through. It would be absolutely amazing, and I'm positive, absolutely positive, it would make a big difference. But it's just convincing. You know, we've got a lot of people to convince. We've got a lot of doctors to convince. We have a government, well, two governments to convince.
If we could just wave
our wand and do it, wouldn't that be marvelous?
Well, I think it does start with us talking about it and us being more aware and with the awareness.
I agree.
Comes back, I believe. And I think that, if this is what we demand, this, you know, it's mental health. And like Brenda said, it's about balance. You know, I believe we're starting to find out that if we do preventative health things, it pays in the long run. You know, if we teach people how to shop and buy food and cook food that is healthy for them, then they won't be buying, you know, a bunch of processed, sugar-laden crap that is causing diabetes, which is costing our country, and I'm sure your country too, Nina, you know, billions of dollars. So, this is, you know, I think this is the way, the consciousness, I'm helpful, of the world is going. We want to do preventative. We want to have balance. We want to have healthy balance in mind, body, and spirit. That's my thing.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Yeah, that's the way it should be. I did have a post that I took off of Facebook that I was going to read to you all, but it's fairly lengthy. Time is kind. You want me to read it anyways?
I do want you to read it anyways.
Well, it's about a Walmart store here in Edmonton and how they handled an issue. So I'm going to read it, and it should get everybody's dander up. On July 1st in the afternoon, this is written by a woman here in Edmonton. Her name is Julie Way. My husband and I arrived at Walmart, Edmonton Capilano branch, and immediately noticed a person sitting on the bench outside with no shoes on, wearing a hospital ID bracelet with her head hanging down. I went up to the person and noted on the bracelet the hospital ID, she was female, and she was unresponsive to my attempts to arouse her. Because we initially were going for a quick trip, neither my husband or I took my cell phones. I went into customer service and explained to Joanne that there was an unresponsive person outside wearing a hospital ID and not wearing shoes, and I asked her to phone to call the paramedics. Joanne responded by saying she knew that, and that the woman was high as a kite. I said that was not for her to make the judgment on others who may have addiction difficulties. I said, and to call 911. She stated she couldn't make that judgment as she had seen the woman drink a bottle of Listerine and that she would not call 911 but would go out and check on her. I said it wasn't her place to determine whether or not the woman needed help as clearly she required medical attention. I informed Joanne that I work in mental health and was appalled that she would not call 911. Joanne said she would call the manager for me to discuss my concerns with. While standing there trying to figure the best course of action, Joanne proceeded to help a customer while she was telling another employee, Sylvia, what I had just said, clearly complaining about me, including that I work in mental health in a very mocking, demeaning manner. A man who had seen the situation asked if he could help. I borrowed his cell phone, phoned 911. Within a few minutes, paramedics arrived. They were very thankful that we had phoned for help for the woman. My husband and I went back into the store and waited for the manager at least 30 minutes. During that time, Joanne left customer service and police officers entered Walmart on an unrelated issue, and then the greeter paged the manager to phone him. He got immediate callback and requested the manager to come down to speak with the police officers. We waited 30 minutes after the incident for Gina, the assistant manager, to come down, but she only did once she had the other issue to deal with. Keep in mind, paging of her began long before, even before the paramedics arrived. I asked numerous times for the manager to be repaged and was met with rude response from customer service staff saying, "We have, madam." When Gina arrived, Joanne was with her. Gina had been informed of the incident and said, "We get a lot of those kinds of people coming around here." I asked her what kind of people she meant. And then I went on to say numerous things, including no compassion was demonstrated by staff. Staff were clearly stereotyping. And numerous other things, including stereotyping and discriminated against those with mental health. That isn't up to Walmart staff to deny a person of medical attention based on their bias. Offensive attitudes towards those with mental health issues, including addiction, and that I do work in mental health, being a registered psychiatric nurse. Joanne stood there the whole time, and at one point, Gina invited her to defend her actions. She said to her, "You didn't specifically say you wouldn't phone 911, but she did. I informed Gina I wasn't going to debate Joanne or listen to her excuses for having a lack of compassion. Before we left, I told Joanne to try to develop some compassion into that soul of hers." Gina's remarks to me were equally as offensive as Joanne's. She was passing judgment on those people, and try as I might to make excuses for their approach and attitude towards the woman, Gina did say it wasn't the policy of Walmart to treat people this way. Gina said she would discuss with Joanne the situation. There were other staff around customer service who knew of the situation and clearly had heard my request to call 911. None of them phoned either. So unfortunately, the lack of human compassion and, very importantly, the denial of medical attention goes beyond just one Walmart employee. Joanne, while we were outside, just right after paramedics arrived, a Walmart employee came up to check out what was going on. I responded by asking, "Why care now?" And that Walmart and their employees clearly don't care. He became very defensive, but once my husband explained to him what had happened, he said that he too was upset of the handling of the situation and was going to speak to the manager. I am posting this here to get this story out and to see how Walmart will respond. How disgraceful that Walmart employees failed to help this woman. As I was told, we were aware of her prior to my arrival, and were more disgraceful yet that when asked by a customer for 911 to be called, they refused. Now, this was sent on to Walmart as well as being posted on Facebook. There has been no response from anyone at this point.
Yeah, it's you know, that's a travesty, that whole thing of that judgment of that employee and even the ones that had heard what was going on. And the reason many people like that might go to Walmart is there's a lot of Walmarts around. And if they're going to be a mega corporation, they're going to have to deal with these problems. They're going to have to find a way to deal with these problems. And maybe they are not concerned with, maybe they are not answering because of potential lawsuits.
Well, maybe, but I doubt it. lawsuits aren't as prevalent up here as they are down where you guys live in the U.S. People don't get sued for very many things up here. I just don't think they care. Personally, I don't think they care.
That the original owner of Walmart, I'm sure he was a money maker, but there was a reason that that guy had a greeters at his stores. I think that that would have been against his wishes.
Oh, I
from
think you're right,
the things
there, Brenda.
Heard about him.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But it's really unfortunate to have that
yeah,
type
some
of
other
situation
kind of
happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it
should not have happened. And with all the people
standing there,
they all have phones at their cashiers. One of them could have picked up a phone and dialed 911.
Well, there's a liability issue that I find it amazing that they just weren't addressing. Because that woman was on their property. But,
well,
yeah,
that
like,
yeah.
Holly, yeah. Walmart is, you know, it's easy to want to, you know, there's so many reasons to want to boycott them. It's too bad. They definitely aren't doing themselves any favors.
Well, no, they're not. And, you know, it is really too bad. And I'm just grateful that that woman and her husband happened to be at the right place at the right time to get help for that woman.
Yep,
because she
right.
obviously needed it, and ignoring her wasn't going to make it go away. She needed help. So
right.
why anybody would just sit there? You know, why not phone an ambulance and get help for her? Why leave her sit there? It just, to me, it just doesn't make sense. It's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's part of the
apathetic. Yes,
people are dealing with, and you know, and let's face it, I don't think it's easy living on the streets. People think that you know, oh well, you know, oh I've heard people say, oh I've heard people, you know, I've heard that people make really good money begging on the street. Well,
oh, yeah,
know,
right.
Okay, first of all, like, you know, that's like, oh, I heard from someone, you know, it's not credible, and I don't believe it for an instant, and I don't think that, you know, it's not necessarily a choice. It's out of necessity. A lot of people live on the street, and I, for one, cannot live with myself walking over people to go eat dinner in a nice place while there's people that are hungry or hurting or in that kind of situation. It's just, I can't do it. Anyway, it just incenses me, as you can tell.
Yeah. It's the whole situation is just, like I said, we're bringing mental health to the light, and I hope for whoever's listening, both live right now or in the archives, this has helped you understand a little bit more about what people face with mental health issues. Not only themselves personally, but anybody that's around them, their family, their friends. And you stop and take a look and be aware of the people that are in your life, and if they need help, help them. And if you can't, point them in the direction of people that can help. I'm losing my voice, ladies.
Yeah. I think that's a signal.
That sounds, time to wrap it up, maybe.
Yeah, I think it is time to. Yeah.
And
I think we've done.
Listening.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for listening. And please make yourselves aware of what's going on around you, please. Shows, let's go on to for the shows. Tomorrow night is BYO Brilliance at 6 p.m. Pacific time with Brenda. And your topic tomorrow, Brenda?
Well, seeking the brilliance of seeking assistance for mental health issues. And we'll probably talk a little bit more about the stigma associated with mental health.
And that brings us to Wednesday in the studio with Lennis at 7 p.m. Pacific time. That one is Lennis will be talking about hot topics, and she's also going to be talking about mental issues in relationships, I believe.
Relationships of mental health people. If I'm understanding this correctly, Lennis, you're talking about how mental health affects relationships. Okay, I think that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that's brilliant.
Okay, great show. That should be a great show, too. And then on Thursday is Filmcology with Brenda. And the film you are doing is Nuts, is that right, Brenda?
Nuts, yeah.
Yeah?
With Barbara Streisand.
Mm-hmm. Go on. Tell us
about
the movie.
It's the other side of the mental health issues, like people who are in the system, and it shows you a lot of reasons why it's best to be involved in a preventative way first.
Oh, that sounds great. Then Friday is Friday Traffic Jams with Lennis. I don't know, Lennis, are you going to be playing some mental health music? I'm not.
Definitely good for mental health. Definitely, it keeps me.
And music. She says music Friday is opera. I don't think I'll be there, Lennis. I'm sorry, but I'm not, just not an opera type person.
All right, there we have it.
And Saturday, Time to Love with Lydia at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And Lydia, your topic?
Yes. I actually changed it because I felt I didn't want to really make light of it. And so I changed it to loving yourself is mentally healthy.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. And we'll be talking about mental health and loving yourself and... So that'll be what I talk about.
Oh, great. And then Sunday is Psychic Readings with Lennis at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And if you want to get one question answered with Lennis, you have to phone early because, again, we couldn't get to all the callers yesterday. So call early and get in there. And she is, again, every ninth caller will get a free psychic reading, one-hour reading with Lennis. So come on, folks, give her a call. And next Monday, Brenda, what's our topic next Monday?
Our topic next Monday?
Yeah.
Do you want me to?
Networking.
I've got the episodes right here.
I got it.
Okay. How does social networking affect your empowerment? Did you say that already, Lydia?
Yes.
Yes, she did. Thank you, ladies. I know I posted them there, but I have forgotten because I was really, really wrapped up in getting all the information I could for tonight's show. So thank you for remembering. My mind just didn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And stay tuned to the Essence of Success Network. We're on every day now, and tune into one of our shows this week devoted to mental health. And then, for right now, I guess, ladies, have you got anything to wrap up?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say about Lennis's music show on Friday night, Traffic Jam. She's going to be featuring Andrea Bocelli. So that's the kind of opera she's talking about. And since I know a bunch of you women are out there looking for that handsome man and his handsome voice, you might want to tune in and remember why he's so famous.
All right.
Oh, all right. Lydia, any last words?
Nope. I'm good. I love you
okay.
all. Thank you for listening.
Yes, I love everyone, too, and thank you very much for listening. And if you're listening in the archives, I thank you for listening there, too. We're going to go on to our meditation now, so turn the lights down, light a candle, and we're going to find some peace of mind. If I can find it. Oh, there it is. All right, here we go.
Now that you are relaxed, my voice and the nature sounds continue to take you deeper. You are on a brilliant and loving journey. Speaking the words, I am that, that I am. You are empowered to create the life of your highest good and joy. As you sleep each night, you see your dreams and aspirations. They safely meet you with joy and love. You happily accept and embrace them. Accept and see yourself healthy and healed, reflecting your chosen physical form. Accept and see yourself in your chosen financial position. See yourself accepting the goals you choose to manifest in your life. Your goals, dreams, and aspirations are completely in your control. Every day you awake refreshed, energetic, and you accept the power to realize love, happiness, and the goals that serve you. You are love. You are brilliant. You are healthy. You are healed. You are secure. You speak these words to yourself daily, several times. I am that, that I am. I am.
Namaste. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Om. Have a good week.